Well, happy Thursday to you, and a special thank you to all the folks who took part in the fall pledge drive that we had last week and the week previous to that here on WFSU, to all the folks who helped to keep the lights on and the home fires burning on this, your public radio station. Deepest appreciation from yours truly. I'm Tom Flanagan, and thank you so much for tuning in to yet another edition of Perspectives this morning. And before we get underway, a reminder, you are always invited to be part of the proceedings via phone and email. 414-1234 is the local number in Tallahassee. It's 800-926-8809. If it's long distance from you to us, perspectives@wfsu.org is the email address. And if you prefer to tweet, have at it, at WFSU Perspective. Even less frequently than cicadas emerge from slumber, the Florida Constitution Revision Commission convenes to look over and debate possible changes to the document upon which the state's governmental structure depends. And local government, too. You have things called constitutional offices and all that. Well, that derives, of course, from the state constitution. The next time that this revision process takes place is 2017, but already preparations are underway to get as many Florida citizens as possible involved in the revision process. This morning on Perspectives, we'll talk with some people who have some incredibly rare insights into what all this is about, because they actually were on the last Constitution Revision Commission. And we're also going to talk about an event that took place yesterday to kind of kickstart this entire thing and get as many people as possible involved in what is going to happen with this incredibly important document. So let's go around the table and say hi to the folks we'll be talking with for about the next 50-some minutes. First, Robert Neighbors, shareholder with the Tallahassee law firm Neighbors, Giblin & Nickerson, served as general counsel to Governor Graham from March through August of 1981. That's right after I moved here to town, Bob. I'm sure I ran into you at the Capitol, because we would hang out with Governor Graham and and the folks back in the day then. And you were on the Constitution Revision Commission now 20 years ago, 1997 and 1998 edition, right?
Right. Guilty as charged. Right. Yeah, it was. It was very – it was a very interesting experience, and looking forward to talking about some of it today.
Yeah, we'll look behind. We'll also kind of look ahead. Now, you also had a partner in crime. In fact, there were, what, 37 members, I think, on the Constitution Revision Commission in 97 and 98.
Right.
And sitting next to you for a lot of that was an old friend of ours, Martha Barnett, retired senior partner in the law firm of Holland and Knight, administrative, governmental law, public policy, all of that. Martha, you were a big, very big deal in the American Bar Association, and served as chair of the American Bar Association House of Delegates, the first woman ever to do that. And you were with Bob on the 97-98 Florida Constitution Revision Commission too, right?
Good morning, Tom. I was, and it was a privilege to be with someone with the background and experience that Bob Neighbors brought to the table. But there were 35 other people and two alternates from around the state who joined us in that endeavor. And we can talk about that process and the citizen input as we go forward.
We can do that indeed, Martha. Right next to y'all, Steve Uhlfelder, Tallahassee lawyer, William J. Fulbright Foreign Scholarship. Your listing of superlatives goes on and on, Steve. But one thing that I thought was terrific in regards to the you're being executive director of the state's first mandated Constitution Revision Commission back in the day, that prior to the 97-98 meeting of the commission, you penned a phenomenal article in the Florida Bar Journal, which provided a preview of that gathering, which has to be one of the most succinct and understandable write-ups of what is likely to happen during that meeting of the commission that certainly I ever read. And you were really prescient on a lot of points that you put into that article.
Well, that had a lot to do with the work of the commission in 77-78. We had some outstanding people on that commission that included the chair, Sandy Dallenberg, Governor Collins, Dexter Douglas, many great judges, legislators. And I think that article was easy to write because I was able to see what the Revision Commission did in 77 and help predict what might happen in the later commission. And we did some fantastic work, and I really appreciated the opportunity to work with these great people.
And given the fact that we now are coming up on yet another one 20 years down the line from that, some of the things that were teed up in 97, 98 are very likely to reemerge in the Revision Commission meeting upcoming, right?
That's correct.
Well, yesterday here in Tallahassee, you folks were all a part of something really significant in trying to get more people beyond just the three dozen odd members of a Revision Commission involved in this whole thing. And that's where Dr. Carol Weisert, Executive Director of the Leroy Collins Institute at Florida State University, comes in. Dr. Weisert, you had these folks together, and we're trying to tell just plain folks, citizens of Florida, that this is a very big deal, and it's their opportunity to get involved in this whole process too, right?
Yes, Tom. Thanks for doing this today. The Leroy Collins Institute is the lead partner in what we're calling a partnership for revising Florida's Constitution. And we have 18 partners, including everything from the League of Women Voters of Florida to the Florida Bar, to Florida Tax Watch, Florida Press Association, Florida League of Cities. So we have all these people who have come together, and to really the purpose of this is really to educate, engage, and empower Florida citizens about the upcoming Constitution Revision Commission. People, you know, when you say Constitution Revision Commission, people's eyes kind of glaze over, but it's so important because it is an opportunity that citizens of Florida are given in their Constitution once every 20 years to have these 37 people come together, and what they talk about issues that need to be in the Constitution, and then what they come up with goes directly to the ballot in 2018. So it's an incredibly important process. But it is one that is interactive. I mean, these people don't just sit in a room, as the three people you have here, don't sit in a room and decide what they're going to do. They go out and they talk to people and they try to find out what the citizens want. So it's a wonderful opportunity for citizens to really follow this commission, who's invited, what kind of issues they really want to the commission to consider, and then to go out and vote and make sure that they know what's going on.
I would dare to suspect that there are a lot of folks who have never even cracked open a copy of the Florida Constitution. Number one, because it is a pretty hefty tome. You look at the U.S. Constitution. I've got a little pamphlet size version of it that I keep out in the car. I don't know why. It's, you know, in case I'm stopped by a police officer, I can look and see in the U.S. Constitution if there's anything that precludes my, you know, getting a ticket. I don't know. But it's 34 pages long. At last look, the Florida Constitution was in excess of 125 pages long, I believe. Pretty weighty, because we put a lot of stuff into it, Mr. Neighbors, that I think you don't do that with the U.S. Constitution, but we do in Florida. How come so many things wind up here?
Well, I think it's really the function of the difference in the two constitutions. I mean, the Florida Constitution, as a state constitution does, deals with a myriad of things. It deals with the basic structure of the government, the relationship between the state government and local governments, allocation of taxing powers, and the judicial system. All of the things that govern Florida and make Florida what it is the table is set in the state constitution. You don't have to read it from cover to cover. You can have an interest in how local government works and how local government passes ordinances and legislation. You can read that section, and you may want to read the basic rights section. So it's a more comprehensive document. It sets forth really the rules of which Florida has governed in the past and is going to progress in the future. And so it is the fundamental important document if you care about Florida.
But it's also a more subject to revision, not just at the hands of the commission that meets every 20 years, but virtually every electoral cycle, the citizenry gets a chance usually to vote on a proposed constitutional amendment, whether it's through a citizens' initiative process or through the auspices of the Florida legislature. In fact, we have two battling constitutional amendments that are being teed up, depending on, I guess, how the court rules on the language. language. One is passed. The other one, I think, is still pending that has to do with What is it? Oh, solar energy. Yeah, isn't that Martha Barnett? That's we have one now that was a citizens initiative. Another one, I think, came out of the legislature, right?
No, they're both citizens.
They're both citizens initiatives. Okay.
Well, I think that situation is actually a good example of one of the strengths of Florida and the Florida Constitution and its recognition that the basic document, the Constitution, is itself for the benefit of the citizens of the state of Florida. And Florida is one of the few states who have so many ways for average citizens, everyday citizens, to actually have a say in what is in the Constitution. One, as you mentioned, is the Citizens Initiative, an initiative process that's fairly cumbersome. It's subject to a lot of constitutional and statutory limitations. It takes a lot of effort to get those solar energy amendments on the ballot, including review by the Florida Supreme Court for certain to make sure that it's clear and that it meets certain standards. Another way that is, I think, unique in the United States that the Florida provides for citizens to have an input into what's in their basic organic document is the Constitution Revision Commission that we're talking about today. And the difference there is this is a body that is appointed by political officers, the governor, the speaker, the president, the Supreme Court justice, the attorney general. But once appointed, it is an independent body that the Constitution describes what it can do, what it must do, and its opportunities. And if that body, which does not have any restrictions on the issues that it can consider, either generated by the commission or proposed by a citizen, if that body makes a determination that this is an issue that should be in the Constitution and they pass it with an appropriate vote, it goes straight to the ballot, as someone said earlier. It does not have to go to the legislature. It does not have to go to the court. So this is a citizen, a document for citizens that provides ways for citizens to amend their basic organic document that is unique.
And that is a direct pipeline. We have a direct pipeline coming up to a quick break here on Perspectives. 414-1234 is the number to call as we talk to former members of the Florida Constitution Revision Commission, and we need your input too. It's an opportunity for you to let us know what you think right here on Perspectives. We are back on Perspectives, and every 20 years in Florida, we have a unique organization called the Constitution Revision Commission, 37 folks and two alternates who get together to look at the state's foundational document. More importantly, I guess, to take input from all over the state, which is unique. This isn't a group that meets behind closed doors and then comes out with the recommendations and boom, it's a done deal. It's a chance for everyone in the state to get involved in something that is of consequence to everyone in the state. And that is coming up when, Carol Weisert, and how can people find out more in advance?
Well, the partnership that I mentioned a few minutes ago has a citizen's guide to the 2017-18 Constitution Revision Commission. And the citizen's guide really provides all the details, when the appointments, which will be before the legislative session in 2017, who appoints, the governor. It's the answer is the governor, the Speaker of the House, the President of the President of the Senate, and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and the Attorney General serves as a member on the commission. It outlines kind of what citizens can do, how they can do it. So the website for that is www.reviseFL.com.
All right. And there will be a series of meetings around the state as part of this entire process. It's not folks got to get on a bus and come up to Tallahassee and all that.
No, that's really a good point. Well, let me just say, too, that the commission itself won't be named until 2017. So people may be saying, well, why are we doing it so early? And the reason is that we really want to put in place a conversation all around the state. So whether you're in law school or whether you're an undergraduate, whether you're in high school, whether you're talking to your buddies at Starbucks, just so people can start thinking about what the, this is coming up. The appointment process is also important. People might also want to make suggestions to the governor about who we might want to appoint or think about who might be a good appointee. So the appointment process is really important. And then once that's started and the commission is named, then the commission itself will hold hearings around the state.
Steve Ufelder, let's talk, since you had such a great insight on what was likely to go down in the last Constitution Revision Commission meeting in 97-98, and you did that great article run-up of that. What's likely to emerge here? Can we look ahead and just say, well, here's some things that possibly, maybe, conceivably are going to be considered by the next commission meeting?
Well, I think the whole question of redistricting will be a major subject. Whether anything happens on it is another issue. The independent commission was approved by the 77 commission. It barely failed when it went to the voters. I think there'll be some pressure to deal with that issue because of what we've been through recently. One of the issues Martha mentioned was about the constitutional initiative and the citizens' initiative. I also think there should be statutory initiative in which citizens don't have to put legislative statutory language in the Constitution, but they can put legislative language that belongs in the statutes. I think we have many things that are in our Constitution that don't belong there. I think also the education article to me is very important in how we fulfill the rights and values that are in our existing Constitution that guarantees all students an equal, uniform, and quality education. I'm not sure all students are getting that in the state, and I think that we need to look at ways to improve that opportunity. I think term limits for legislators will be a discussion. I'm a big proponent of getting rid of term limits, and I think that that's something that will definitely be considered. I think there'll be looks at issues looked at the court. I think that not much needs to be changed with Article 5, but I think that will be a subject of contention in during the commission. So those are a few things, and I'm sure the others will have on our panel have other thoughts as well.
Sure. And Article 5, for those who don't know, is what?
Is the judiciary article. I mean, one of the issues that have been talked about is term limits for justices. Right now, the only term limit is age 70, which to me is a very young age.
Spring chicken. Bob Neighbors, you were, before we went into break, wanted to remark a little bit about the situation on that, those two warring or contradictory solar power amendments that are
Well, not
out
so much
right
that,
now.
But one of the things that that's important to realize is that, as Martha said, we have in our Constitution the ability to citizens to do an initiative, to do an amendment to the Constitution. The problem with that is it has to meet a single subject test, which is a very strict test, which has to get judicial approval. One of the strengths of the Constitutional Revision Commission is it's a revision, so it's not bound by that limitation. It can do a substantial revision. Once the citizens are appointed to the commission, they're really unleashed. They're unleashed to present to the voters directly whatever they think is a good idea, as opposed to being limited by a single subject. And so that's a very important but somewhat buried distinction. And Florida is unique in both areas. One of the things that you asked Steve to indicate some areas of change, the other thing that fundamental thing that has to be decided by a commission is they want to do anything. Do you want to do harm? Do you want to change something that harms an existing structure? And so just because a commission is formed and there's some things that people would like to change, the first rule ought to be do no harm, not to end up with a document that is less progressive and less effective than one we have. And one of my big areas is that one of the things that Florida does have is a extremely broad and progressive compared nationwide home rule provision, which allows counties and cities by local ordinance to deal with their own problem, to deal with the distinctions between Pensacola and Tallahassee and Okeechobee and all the different communities at the local level. And that was one of the geniuses of the 68 revision. So one of the concerns a lot of people have is do no harm on that provision. Steve mentioned the judicial provision, Article 5, do no harm in that provision. So there's always a tendency any time a commission is formed is a felt obligation to do something. And there are many things that need to be done. But one of the guiding lights ought to be do no harm. Don't do something that we end up with a product that's less progressive and less important to Florida's future than one we have.
So do not feel compelled to fix that which is not broken to begin with. Yes.
Exactly.
What are some things you think might be coming up, Martha?
Well, I think we're going to see a lot of the same issues that historically have been brought before other commissions and even initiatives that Bob and Steve have talked about. But one of the things that I think is an opportunity and a challenge for this next commission is not to look at where we are, but where we as a state need to be. What, if anything, in our organic document that controls state government, local government, controls taxes, controls education, controls the judiciary, all of these things, what is it that Florida, on the brink of greatness in terms of size and progressiveness in this country, what do we need as a state to allow us to continue to grow and serve our citizens and meet the citizens? If you're like me, a year ago, I was working on my iPad and had no idea the kind of opportunities and things it could do today that I use it for today. I didn't even know those kind of things existed. I think that this state knows where it is today, has no idea where it's going to be 20 years from now, may have a vision for tomorrow. But this document can be an important roadmap, and we have to consider globalization, technology, the changing demographics of the state of Florida, the diversity, the breadth and depth of resources in Florida from Key West to Pensacola and how they differ. And this is a chance for citizens to say, this is my vision for Florida. This is my vision, and this is how we use these things to ensure the quality of life and the quality of our environment and the integrity of our institutions going forward.
And I always thought it was interesting, Carol Weiser, that as we should be, people get very involved with presidential politics. We had another Republican candidates debate last night. But that sometimes seems to achieve visibility to the exclusion of things where people really can make a difference beyond just their simple vote on election day. And you've got a process like this to take, as Martha said, the future vision of the state of Florida and put it out there for anybody to come in and say, hey, have you guys considered this? Is this something that we could do, maybe, possibly?
I think that's really a wonderful way to put it. And I think that it really is an opportunity to have this discussion. So even if nothing happens, if no substantial things come out, if we've started a conversation with the citizens of Florida around this issue that deals with the future of the state and what kind of state we have and what kind of state we want, then I think that would be successful. And I think particularly, again, the younger people, because I think a lot of my students and a lot of the people in the audience probably are really disgusted with politics, and they just don't want to have anything to do with it. So I think this is a way to sort of reframe that thinking and not think about the people that were on the debate last night or what's going to happen next year, but really thinking about the future of the state and what can the citizens do to advance that in the way they want. And I think maybe framing it that way and reaching out to the younger generations would be a wonderful thing if that could happen.
Well, if you would like to get in some early input as to what you think ought to go into the Florida Constitution or maybe some things that should not be in the Florida Constitution, here's your chance at 414-1234 for perspectives. It's 800-926-8809 if long distance from you to us. We have former members of the Constitution Revision Commission with us, along with Carol Weissert, who heads up the Leroy Collins Institute at Florida State University. A reminder, too, that every program you hear on Perspectives is put online at WFSU.org, usually within a couple, 3 hours after the program actually airs, and you can go on in virtual perpetuity and hear the show again and again and again, if that be your bailiwick. One big difference in the way that thing – this was another constitutional amendment that came up not too terribly long ago – that changed the threshold for citizen approval. Voter approval of constitutional amendments is now 60%, and it is not just a simple majority plus one, which is what the 97-98 Constitutional Revision Commission had to deal with. Do you think, Steve, is that going to change anything, do you think?
I definitely think it'll change things. It should temper this Constitution Revision Commission to realize, you know, we are a diverse state. We do have demographics that are probably as different as California and New York. And I think that I personally think it's a good idea to have the 60%. If they're going to change to back to 50%, ironically, they're going to need 60%. I think one of the things I learned in the 77 Commission was that you need to be careful the number of things you put on. And I think the lesson of the 77 will help the 2017 and 18 Commission realize that they don't want to just go through all this work and not have what they put on the ballot pass. And I think because there may be some efforts to deal with issues that we don't need to change, it's probably good we have the 60%.
Okay. You mentioned that too, Bob Neighbors, might help to be – you've got a little bit more judiciousness as you decide, okay, do we really, really want to put this before the voters or not?
Well, I mean, I think the 60% is a positive thing. I think it basically increases the bar in terms of what's approved. It will be an influence on the deliberation of the commission, because one of the things that always is in the background is the number of proposals that are put on, and secondly, whether they're controversial or not. And that deals with the 60% rule to a large degree. But, you know, one of the problems that we live with in reality is people get mad at government, and they have something that happens and they get frustrated. But the Constitution is a living document that sets the table for the structure for government. So you want to try to, when I say no harm, not to vet a temporary concern about government into a constitutional proposal that we have to live with. So I think the 60% helps on that, as Steve said. And if something is important enough and it can be communicated enough, the 60% can be met.
Martha Burnett, maybe a little bit of history here would be helpful. Even though it is difficult to make constitutional changes, particularly if something is already in there, it certainly is not unheard of. I'm thinking of the late lamented in some quarters bullet train amendment that made it into the Constitution, and then under Governor Bush, he kind of launched a pretty effective campaign to get that taken out of the Constitution. So that can happen too, right?
Yes. It's a living document, as Bob just said. It's a lot harder to take something out, right, particularly in an isolated situation such as the bullet train or one issue that gets a lot of attention is pregnant pigs in the Constitution or the net ban. There are many issues that people would like to have statutorily addressed as opposed to in the Constitution. It's very difficult to get something out. Inertia, excitement about an issue. It's easier to get something in, although it's pretty hard to get an amendment to the Constitution through the legislature or the Constitutional Revision Commission or initiative petition, and as it should be. I like Steve and Bob, believe the 60% vote is an important attribute today, and that I hope that it will not be changed. In that context, if you look at many of the amendments passed in the last several years, either through the Constitutional Revision or citizens' initiatives, any number of them actually get a very large percentage of the vote from the citizens of the state. They certainly get the 60, but some get the 70, 75%, a strong voice from the citizens. Yes, this is what I want to have my Constitution protect or reflect or encourage. And one of the frustrations that people have with the Constitution and the revision process today is the legislature's failure to then implement the constitutional amendments that the citizens have adopted. the most probably the most famous example is the casino gambling to raise money for education, to improve and enhance education, core value, a fundamental value of this state, and essentially the money got diverted to general revenue, basically offset general revenue. The most recent example, which I think we will hear about through the next Constitution Revision Commission process, is Amendment 1, dealing with the environmental questions and the environmental lands and protection and land acquisition. And best I can tell, the legislature essentially, much like in the lottery, have ignored the requirements of that particular amendment. It'll probably lead to a lot of legislative action and debate and discussion, but it might well lead to constitutional consideration, including, I think, a consideration of how do you hold the legislature accountable, other than at the ballot box, for implementing the will of the people when it's adopted by 75% or more of the people.
Well, as I heard in some of the discussions at the legislature, there was some debate as to what the actual intent of the voters might have been on Amendment 1. We'll hold that to the other side of the break, which is rapidly bearing down upon us. The Constitution Revision Commission of Florida, next meeting in 2017-2018. We got some members of the commission here on Perspectives. Give us a call, 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. Back on Perspectives on WFSU-FM. Thanks so much for tuning in and for availing yourself of an opportunity to share your thoughts on what should be in the Florida Constitution, because to use your term, Martha Burnett, it may seem ethereal, it may seem remote. It's something that is way up in the political stratosphere, and just plain folks couldn't possibly give any kind of input as to what this thing is going to look like and how it's going to affect their lives. But really, it has a lot more significance and a lot more malleability, if you want to use that term, than a lot of the other stuff that we deal with in a political viewpoint. How many meetings are we going to have going around the state once the 2017-2018 Constitution Revision Commission is named and empowered and hits the road, Carol?
You know, that's really an interesting question, Tom. As Martha mentioned, the commission is set out in the Constitution, and the Constitution has a number of provisions, including how many members and who appoints them. But the commission itself makes a lot of decisions in terms of its rules. And so I think the last one had 13 hearings around the state before they came up with their recommendations, and quite a number afterward. But it's up to the commission itself to decide how many hearings they want to have. It's to their advantage to go widely across the state and have as many as they can. But the other thing to think about, too, is these are people who have other jobs and who are really taking a lot of their time to do this. So it's a very time-consuming component.
But now you also have additional ways to give input, such as social media and all, which was not, again, available to the last meeting, which was in 97 and 98.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And that's something we talked about yesterday, too, because this is a whole new world. And again, reaching those young people that we've been talking about, I think this is a particularly important component for them, the social media, making it in a form that can cause discussion, putting in the information in a way that really relates to people. I think we have a lot of challenges, but I think the opportunities are wonderful.
Well, let's go to the phones here. We're getting some input right now, folks. Let's go first to Laura on line one. Hi, Laura. Thanks for calling Perspectives.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
As the gentleman said, the Constitution is a living document of the people, for the people, and by the people. And the process doesn't seem to be respected by our politicians, because we'd like to see cause and effect with our votes. And so that discourages a lot of young people from voting because they don't see the benefits.
Well, that's a... Why don't we go around the table, Laura, and let everyone address that. Steve Uelfeller, let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. Kind of a tee up that Martha Barnett had made, that once you have something enshrined in the state constitution, I mean, this is the foundational document of government and all that, and if you have political entities, whether on the local or the state or even the national level, that say, no, we can't go along with that, what can you do?
Well, there's the power of the press. There's the power individuals have. Social media is mentioned. I think one of the interesting things that will take place, and it took place in the last two, is that a general election for governor will be on the ballot at the same time. And I think that will be an active discussion of issues in gubernatorial debates and gubernatorial action because, as I remember, it was in 77, 78 when Bob Chevin ran against Bob Graham. So I think – I think there's opportunities to discuss things. I think one of her comments about people, you know, young people and others are troubled with government. You know, you see what's going on in Washington. You see some of the things going on in Tallahassee and people get frustrated and think their vote doesn't count. But I think the more we can show how important these issues are and how it affects their children, their grandchildren in the future, I think you'll get more input.
Yeah, and likely you'll get I guess more accessibility to the process through the Constitution Revision Commission than you would coming, say, during a session of the Florida legislature to Tallahassee and you hang out on the fourth floor and hope to grab the ear of some passing senator or House of Representatives member.
One thing that happened yesterday that was interesting that Sandy Dallenberg was a panelist and was an observer and he attended by Skype. You know, there'll be more opportunities that I've always wondered why in committee hearings in the legislature we don't, you know, have opportunities to Skype more, to have interaction, because most people can't afford to come to Tallahassee to testify. So therefore, you get a lot of people testifying in committees that are paid to testify. I always say most of the people in the room are being paid. The lobbyists are getting paid. The legislators are getting paid. But I think with Skype and most social media, we have an opportunity to do more.
Bob Neighbors, could that be a possible thing that could be considered during the next Constitutional
Revision
Commission?
Well, I mean, I think the Constitutional Revision Commission, the caller would really have an opportunity to be heard. I mean, if this commission follows the pattern of others, there's public hearings as we sit around the state. They're not intimidating. You get up at the public hearing and you say what you want to say, what you feel is important. And generally, if it has merit, it's converted into proposal, which is heard. It's a very simplistic process, and citizens have in their face direct access. So it's a very they ought to feel good about that. And once the commission starts, we'll watch where the public hearings are, and just as a citizen of this country and this state, stand up and say what you think needs to be changed. But the other point is that the well, as Martha said, as I keep saying, will continue to say, is the Constitution, once a revision is made, it's there. There's not many oops saying, well, did we really mean that? Should we have done that? And so you've got to be careful that you don't harm things, and government's very fragile. And one of the things that a Constitution can do is put limitations on governmental power. And one of the things consistent with the question is the local government is you have the opportunity to go to a county commission meeting or city council and be heard. And it's a lot easier to be heard on issues that you're concerned about than it is in Tallahassee. And so two points. One is that the lady that calls, she'll be heard at the Constitutional Revision Commission, whatever she's interested in. But there should be no hesitancy about standing up and saying what it is. But secondly, don't get frustrated with the lack of access to government and do something that harms your access in the future at the local level.
Okay. Martha Barnett, your thoughts on that, particularly as making this a more accessible procedure and maybe, as Bob pointed out, this is a way to kind of maybe rein in some of the, if not abuses, at least the overreach of some other parts of government that may have gotten a little out of whack.
I heard Steve and maybe even Bob comment on the possibility of term limits being an issue that will come up again. Like Steve, I have never been in favor of the artificial limitation. I've always felt that was at the ballot box. that every 2 or 4 years people were up for re-election, and that was the best way to control term limits. As a practical matter, that doesn't happen because of the sentiments expressed by Laura, our caller, that people don't think their vote matters, and so they don't vote, and then their vote doesn't matter. It's a throwaway. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And if a Constitution Revision Commission or a citizens' initiative or whatever forum will speak to the interest of the citizens and inspire them to exercise that precious right to participate in government. It is a First Amendment promise, the right of people to petition and be part of their government. If it will inspire them to do that, that in of itself, as Carol said, is worthy of the efforts of a 20-year opportunity for the citizens to get involved in learning about their Constitution and learning about ways they can improve or stabilize the foundation of its government. But my great concern in this country, particularly as I see citizens around the world fighting and dying for the right to vote, is that we don't, because we don't think it matters. And each of us has got to make sure we send the exact opposite message. And the Constitution revision process is one way, and my experience with it is no one was turned away. Every person who spoke, some response was given, and most of the time it resulted in a committee of the commission actually considering the recommendations that were made. And some of those became part of our ultimate proposals that went on the ballot.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, because that's what I think Vivian, who's our next caller, is going to be referencing in her comment. Hey, Vivian, thanks for calling.
Thank you. First, just a comment. The appointment process is something I'm very concerned about, because whoever the leaders are at that time, and with a pretty gerrymandered state, the legislative appointments could end up having quite a few ideologues, folks that are really not qualified, that are very anti-government. That really concerns me. But my real question is, kind of along that line, my one personal interest I have is campaign finance reform. And I think that there would be an opportunity here. But I'm wondering how much reign does the state constitution have, and could, you know, how do you figure out the boundaries of what you can do on the state level so that you don't get in cross purposes with the federal constitution, which, of course, would annul anything we do here?
Okay. And in other words, you're not seeing that there could be any attempt on the part of either the Constitution Revision Commission or a Citizens Initiative or even the legislature to try to, let's say, overturn Citizens United, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, not overturn Citizens United, but work it to the maximum margins without getting into a federal lawsuit.
Well, let's see if we can handle both of them here as time is racing by. What about the concerns about the appointment process for the Constitution Revision Commission? Is it at the whims of the powers that be at the moment, Steve? Or
of course, it's a political appointment. It's probably the most important appointment a governor and speaker and president and chief justice will make. But, you know, we elect these people. They're representative of our governments, and they should have a right to make the appointments. I would hope, like they would do in 77 and 97, is to look at diversity and look at the way the state has such a large population of Hispanics, African Americans. We're split 50-50 Democratic, Republican, not split anymore. We're about a third independent or non-party affiliation, the third Republican, third Democrat. That's the way registrations are going. So I think it's important. Let me answer the other part of that question real quick. I think it's very difficult to regulate campaign financing because of that case you mentioned in the Supreme Court. But I think there are things you can do. I've often thought that you could restrict where contributions, 50% or more of your contributions have to come from your district. Things like that that may not interfere with citizens, but make sure that more people are contributing, that Tallahassee is not the main influence in legislative races. So that may be one thing.
Okay, Bob Neighbors, what do you think?
Well, I would think that one of the that along with reapportionment, how that's done, I would hope that campaign finance would be a major issue. But what you've got to do is there's got to be a lot of thoughtful analysis of the federal cases to see what are the rooms to maneuver at the state level and come up with, again, a thoughtful proposal. I mean, it'd be highly charged politically, but I think there's a general feeling among the people that the system's out of control. And that's, to me, is a very appropriate constitutional initiative as long as it has to meet the framework that we're allowed to do in our federal system.
Well, what about the appointment process that Vivian brought up?
I think there's a you could be cynical. I try not to be cynical and say that the Republicans control the House and the Senate and the governor's office, so the Democrats are going to be outside whistling in the wind. I don't think that's the case. I think generally the political leaders have a sense of responsibility and they recognize that there has to be a diversity in order for the proposals to have legitimacy. And so I think there will be some all past have had diversity. And so – but I don't know how you institutionalize that and change it. You've got to depend upon the goodwill of the political leaders that make the appointments.
Okay. It sounds scary, Martha, is it?
No. This is a terrific opportunity for our current political leadership to rise – to a new height. I believe that each of them will recognize – these are smart people. They will recognize that if they want this process to be successful, it will depend upon the credibility of the commission and the individuals appointed to it and the sense that those individuals are there not to fill a political role but on behalf of the people of the state. And I think our current leadership, as they have done in the past, will recognize the opportunity. So it's to me, this is it's a wonderful process to re-engage perhaps Floridians in the future of Florida.
And in a very direct way, too. And again, Carol Weiser, this is a chance for folks to, even at this early stage of the game, before there's even been an announcement of who will be sitting on this particular Constitution Revision Commission, people can start teeing up, gee, here are some things that I really think they ought to be looking at.
I think that's exactly one of the purposes of this project, is to get people thinking. At the meeting yesterday, we had a young woman stand up and say, what about 20 and 30-year-olds? How are we going to be represented on the commission? And I thought that was interesting, because she's really thinking about what kind of people we want. That's exactly what we want to do. I think we also have a model in the 77-78 commission, which was appointed by all Democrats at that time, and they did appoint the Republicans to that commission. So I think there's a real model here for reaching out, as Martha said, to make sure you get the very best people, depending, not really reliant upon what party they're from.
Yeah, and of course, undertone to what Vivian was asking, we have seen so many governmental entities, whether it's within the Florida legislature, I mean, just yesterday, where there was this long 17-minute rant that went on in the Senate, or in Congress, where they're approaching total meltdown and unable to function. And what should befall the commission if it got into such also dire straits like that, Steve?
One of the things that's a problem for young people serving, I know it takes a week to 10 days a month to serve on these commissions, and it's difficult for young people to get away from their jobs, and also people don't have staffs. Getting back to the question of the legislative issue of fundraising, I think that's the most fundamental issue we have in both the state and national level, how we fund campaigns. And I think until we can figure out how we can do that in a way that's not objectionable to the politicians and the citizens, we'll continue to have problems in the way we deliver our government.
Yeah, because that has changed the entire equation. I mean, but not saying that the electorate has not shown time and time again it might not be able to be bought, but still, if the coin of the realm is literally the coin of the realm.
Yeah, but in a lot of subtle and very pervasive ways that people don't really understand. The money, and Martha and mine and Steve's lifetime, the money has fundamentally changed in so many ways the political process, I think.
Yeah, and perhaps not for the better. I mean, it's,
no, not for the better at all.
It's certainly given a lot of extra business to places like the Governor's Club. That's for sure. They those things just go on incessantly nowadays. Folks, what a great discussion. God, we will see you around the state, Carol Weisert, as you get this organized. And again, the website people should go to?
Yes, it's www.reviseFL.com.
Thank you. Steve Ufelder, Bob Neighbors, and of course, Martha Barnett, thank you all for being on Perspectives today and for providing your insights and your expertise. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox, Lydell Rawls on the deck today, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, education. Be sure to tune in before the last bell, or you'll get a tardy slip right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.